It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Alrighty, here we go. We are off and running, a brand new month in 2018. That's at least 31 fewer days of Donald J. Trump we have to tolerate, which is good. It's not quite like having perfect consciousness on your deathbed from the Dalai Lama, but still, you know, all hell, life is relative, right? All things are relative, all relatives are things, my relatives took all my things. Yeah, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, this is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com and headon.live are where we live. Streams are operating streamingly at both locations, as well as Roku, Stitcher, TuneIn, all kinds of fun places. And that's a wonderful thing. And since the streams are all running in the same place, a reminder, if you try to get the program live and you can't get it at the Horn's TuneIn site, that means the White Rose Society stream is down. And if that is ever the case, then you can go over to headon.live, which works like gangbusters. Yes. So just, you know, that's just a little reminder. And as far as reminders go, you know, this program is brought to you by you. This program is a creation of the contributors and subscribers who make sure that the program stays on the air. It being the first day of February, the first day of every month, is, of course, Shirley's Challenge. Perpetuated now in Bruce's memory by Laborman, by Ralphs, and by one other anonymous individual. So that means there's $200 in challenges on the table so that we can get the month off to a flying start. Okay, so it's kind of coffee breaks over back on your head for me because I've had 4 glorious days of no fundraising, but now the first of the month is back upon us, and, well, that means fundraising again. If we ever get to the point where we've got the equivalent of $410 a month subscribers, by Jove, we'll have fundraising-free programs every night, but we aren't there yet, not by a long shot. We're back to fundraising. Sorry. No, I really am sorry. I hate this. I despise this. This is the one thing about all of this that makes it a chore. The conversations, the current events, the filibobsters, the various themes of the various days of the week. I love all of that. This I despise. But I thank you all so very much for keeping the program on the air. And so we've got a $200 challenge on the table. That means that if we can get 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 2, 2 at 1, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 12, 50, etc., Well, then, by Jove, we'll meet the challenge. Your money will be doubled, okay? That means, you know, your 10 will become 20, et cetera. Your 50 would become 100. Your 100 would become 2. And so that's how this works. Now, as far as subscribers and stuff go, it's real easy. If you go to the Contribute tab or you use the PayPal interface, the Contribute tab at headonradionetwork.com, the PayPal interface at headon.live, you can either become a subscriber or just kick in one time only, or, you know, one at a time, however you prefer to work, and help us knock all of that down. For instance, thanks to Bob in Texas, and thanks to John, we got $90 to go now to finish fundraising and knock down the challenge, Shirley's challenge. We got $90 to go to do that, and that would be a huge, huge start to the month of February, which is short anyway, which means fundraising is going to be short. But we'll have, if we keep up with it all the way, we'll have 3 or 4 days of fundraising free radio at the end of February. We also have the Patreon campaign. I think we've got 13 members of the Patreon campaign. Back when Patreon announced a change to its fee structure, that pissed a bunch of people off. Patreon really shot themselves in the foot. And I understand people being upset about it. I was upset about it. And eventually Patreon did change their tune and decided that they would, in fact, not change their structure. So, yay. But the Patreon campaign's got about 13, 14 participants in it. And thank you to each and every one of those of you who do that. The Patreon campaign is there mainly for people who just absolutely cannot stomach PayPal. And I understand that. There's always the post office, of course, and the United States mail, and that mail is delivered to The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV 25801. And just let me know in advance, and I'll tell Boss Man Wayne. He can leave his spider-proof gloves in the truck and take a crowbar with him, or maybe one of those handy dandy wrenches they use to turn to with the water meter and stuff, and in case he runs into the exalted grand noble cyclops exalted Kleagle dragon whatever, because they get their mail there at the same place we get ours, because you know the clan is a good customer and they pay on time, and that's really all that matters. I mean, if this was a great big humongous program, maybe we'd have a protest marching up and down in front of the UPS store there, and they could say, you know, don't do business with these guys as long as they do business with the Klan. But we're just a little tiny radio program, and so we're not going to do that. But we do have many thanks to go out at the beginning of the month to the sponsors and creators of this program. Thank you very kindly to Patrick in Germany. Thank you very much, Patrick. Thank you to Peter down in Austin. Thank you, Peter. And thank you to program partial sponsor Vernon in San Diego Way. Thank you very much to our Canadian affiliate manager for Horn Nutraceuticals. Thank you to Lauren there in far Alberta. Thank you, Lauren. Thank you very much to Brock. Much obliged, Brock. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very kindly to Bob there in North Carolina. Thanks to Smitty in Orlando. Thank you, Smitty. Thank you to Joseph in Washington State. Thank you, Joseph. And thanks very kindly to Anne Marie in lovely New Orleans, Louisiana, where I guess it's Mardi Gras time, isn't it? Yeah, thank you, Anne-Marie. Maybe we'll get to say howdy or something if there's a horn presence at Netroots Nation at the beginning of August of this year. Mm-hmm. So thank you one and all to our subscribers for this first day of the month. Thank you very much indeed. So that covers pretty much all of that. Now, of course, there is the matter of how we keep ourselves perked up through these cold and bitter months. We're going to go back to blue-ass cold this evening. I think the overnight low is 10. Which is kind of weird because it's like 50-ish outside right now. I know. Go figure. But, yeah. Question coming in from Clarity. Let me answer that. When are you going to be gone? Ferg and I will be leaving for New York on the 15th. One day after smack dab in the middle of the month. We'll be gone the 15th, 16th. That's Thursday, Friday. And then because of the way airline schedules and ticketing works out, we'll also be gone the 19th, which is Monday. I had hoped to get home in time to do a program that evening. But, sorry, no, that's not me. At you, that's just, you know, beauty, airlines. No, we'll be rolling through the door here at about 12:30 Tuesday morning. Meh, but you'll just have that. Yeah, so, that's where that stands. So, 15th, 16th, and 19th, no programs. And hopefully we'll make up for that shortfall before I go. But we'll adjust accordingly. Now the horn in, which, you know, if you guys want to have a little mini New York City horn in, I'll need to hear from you. So I've got some idea of how many people are going to show up. And we've got it tentatively scheduled for the evening of the 17th, a Saturday there in New York. You can reach me, you know, on Facebook, Messenger. You can reach me at bobkincaid@gmail.com. Either way, but, you know, give me some idea. And don't just assume, well, everybody else will tell him, so I'll just show up. I've got to have some idea of how many people are going to be there. And, you know, I mean, it's not like there's going to be thousands or anything, but still, some idea of who's going to be there. So that we know what kind of space to try to arrange for, okay? And if there are if there's sufficient interest, then I'm not going to juggle or do tricks, and Ferg's not bringing his guitar or anything. It's just a meet and a hang out and greet and talk and nothing earth shattering. So that's where the horn end stands, and that's where the New York trip stands. Okay, so we've got that out of the way. But no. It's kind of, you know, traveling this time of year, there's always the question of how much will the weather suck, and we of course have to get up crazy early in the morning, and hope that there's not like 2 feet of snow on the mountain and make our way down to Charleston to catch the plane, which will then, because it makes so much sense, which will then fly us to Atlanta, at which point we will then turn around and fly to New York, because God forbid we should have a straight shot. I mean, yeah, it's West Virginia. Nobody wants to go to New York. Now, we got straight shots to Atlanta. We got straight shots to Charlotte. Hell, I think we got a straight shot to Dallas. And a few, and these are all hubs, of course, and some connectors to the likes of Chicago. But I absolutely draw the line at flying to Chicago to fly to New York. Flying to Atlanta to fly to New York is silly enough. Chicago is just too damn much. Just too much. So anyway, my apologies especially for the Monday absence, but can't be helped. No, I won't be here for pitchers and catchers report, Marty, and but that's okay because they'll report even without me being here for them to report too. Right. Yeah. We are making considerable headway. We are now $40 away from meeting the February Shirley's Challenge, which is freaking awesome. Only $40 away. Thank you very kindly. In addition to John and Bob in Texas, thank you to Charlene in Rhode Island, and thank you very kindly to John. Thank you very, very much indeed. John, thank you so very much. So, hey, there we go. And by the way, Bob said, please thank Paul from Parts Unknown for the delicious Paulmans. You know, if it wasn't, I swear, if it wasn't so labor-intensive, Paul from Parts Unknown could have a cottage industry in making those things. I mean, they're just, oh, they're magnificent. The crispy, the salty, the slight taste of the olive oil and the roasty, toasty, and the aroma. Oh, the aroma of those Paulmans. Wowzer. Just wowzer. Okay, but anyway, cold winter months, and you know, I've found that because I have to watch my blood sugar, I'm an ex-diabetic. I think you can be an ex-diabetic, can't you? Or an ex-almost diabetic, or I'm certainly an ex-metformin user. I can tell you that. And my gut is a lot happier as a result of that, so it's worth the effort. But I've found that high protein is a big key this time of year, and that's why the gang over there at Horn Nutraceuticals, at Horn Labs on Twitter, brought me something special today. They've been on a hillbilly kick of late, and consequently today they brought me, and remember, all Horn Nutraceutical products are free-range, cage-free, cruelty-free, gluten-free, and yes, vegan. And so consequently, I got a bottle today of these wonderful little capsules. That's right, gibbous gizzards. Oh, yes, oh, yes, oh, yes, you want some of these. Gibbous gizzards, vegan, cruelty-free, non-GMO, cage-free, free-range, gluten-free, gibbous gizzards. Only from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs, because, after all, we can't be a professional radio program unless we've got a bullshit nutritional supplement to try to pitch to you each and every night. It certainly keeps the hard-working periodontic peripatetic scientists at Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter on their toes, keeping you on yours. Yes, gibbous gizzards. That's right, they're chicken gizzards, but they're vegan chicken gizzards. How can we offer you vegan chicken gizzards on the radio in the form of a nutritional supplement? Well, we can do it because it's complete and utter bullshit. Absolutely. We're the only lab that has vegan gibbous gizzards for a very good reason. We're the only ones with the courage to try. No, actually, we're the only ones with the imagination. So you see how that works. Gibbous gizzards only from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. You know, I've never cared much for chicken gizzards, but thanks to gibbous gizzards from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter, I can get my daily nutritional requirement of gibbous gizzards, and since I've got gizzards, that means they won't stick in my craw. See how that works? Yes. Gibbous Gizzards, only from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter, and intended specifically for those folks who are simple enough to purchase nutritional supplements from some guy on the radio. Gibbous Gizzards, only from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. And if you order now, a 90-day supply of Gibbous Gizzards will only set you back $113.57. $113.57 for a 90-day supply of Gibbous Gizzards by Grapthar's Hammer. What a savings! Because you'll also get a little bundle of useless, meaningless test strips that you can use to test your Gibbous Gizzards and make sure that what we're telling you here is absolutely true when you get them there. That is, that it has no nutritional benefit whatsoever and is a completely bullshit nutritional supplement right up there with paleo chocolate chicken bone malted beverage stuff. Yes, Gibbous Gizzards only. From Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. Accept no substitutes, post no bills, use no hooks, this side up, FOB, COD, GIZZARD, only from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. Don't call now, operators aren't standing by, it's not a free call. Gibbous Gizzards. You'll be gibbously glad you didn't. Okay? And by the way, of course, it's also time, this here thorn in the side Thursday. It's also time for This Day in Horn History. You know, once you've got a 12-plus-year-old radio broadcast, you can do things like that. And for today's edition of This Day in Horn History, we're setting the date on the Wayback Machine 8 years into antiquity, all the way back to February the 1st, 2010. Why, I remember it like almost like it was only 8 years ago. Diddly-doo, 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 diddly-doo. On that February the 1st of 2010, Bob's back from a D.C. trip, having driven through a snowstorm which brought the traffic to a halt due to a 20-car pileup. He's had to sit in the parking lot that was I-83 in his rental Chevy HHR, a vehicle which Bob spends a considerable amount of time bashing. It's like sitting in a go-kart, and it drives like one, too. My, oh, my, I still remember that vehicle and how very much it sucked. Thanks for showing your raging liberal elitism, Kincaid. Not all of us can afford to drive around in a Bentley GT like you do. Sometimes a go-kart is all the hoi polloi can get our greasy paws on. Well, if that's what you got your greasy paws on, chances are you're walking. Because, God, those things sucked. That is the natural state of a Chevy HHR, by the way, not moving. Over the course of the 2 hours Bob spends sitting in traffic and being a glutton for punishment, Bob dials into the AM band. And lo and behold, the first station is playing a rerun of, quote, that noxious right-wing drug-addled Dominican boy trip-taking gas bag, Flush Flemball. So Bob clicks through three separate stations outside of York, PA, and all three are in fact playing reruns of Rush Limbaugh from earlier in the week on a Saturday. Quote, I had to move over to the FM band because I Got You Babe is a hell of a lot more desirable than my friends, Obama's just like Pol Pot, Bob says, because I remember that was one of those lines. That, you know, Barack Obama's just like Pol Pot is one of those things that just kind of sticks in your mind. I remember it now as though it were yesterday. Yes, I can even see in my mind's eye that long string of traffic heading up. I was headed to Harrisburg to meet up with our good friend Rick Smith. And if there was a good thing to be had out of it, it's that I found a little hole-in-the-wall cinder block dive right on the Maryland-Pennsylvania line that had the most magnificent crab cake sub and creamy crab soup that has ever passed my lips. I still think about it, and one of these days, if I'm ever headed up I-83, I'm going to find that joint again. Goodness gracious, it was good. Bob's D.C. trip has been somewhat hampered by all the snow, but he does point out that all the snow blanketing D.C. made for a very quiet city. D.C. was so quiet, you could hear individual brain cells dying inside the Republican skulls, Bob observes. Somewhere along his trip back from D.C., Bob pulls into a busted-up roadside shack called Filler Up, advertising, see, I was talking about it even then, advertising homemade cream of crab soup, which Bob reports was the best cup of soup I've ever had in my life, and it was. Later in the program, there's news of what turns out to be a beautiful racket. According to Bob, Sarah Palin's Political Action Committee, Sarah PAC, is revealed to have spent $63,000 buying her own book, Going Rogue. Naturally, this gives Bob new business ideas as to methods of financing future Horn Gulfstream 5s, etc. Hey, Maybach and Gulfstream 5s don't buy themselves, Asa. In conversation with the sage of Southwest Wisconsin, that would be Brother Albert, Bob comes up with what those of us versed in Godspeak would call a divine or perhaps the most high nutritional supplement. The sacred supplement that Bob has come up with this day is Nutri-Jesus. Remember, this is a full 7+ years before Horn Nutraceuticals was even a twinkle in Bob's eyes, which leads me to believe that Bob was secretly planning the entire Horn Nutraceuticals dodge long before it ever became reality. Well, at least imaginary reality. Yes. And that's a brief look at the ghost of Horn past all the way back to February 1st, 2010 for This Day in Horn History. I'm telling you, Nutri-Jesus has real possibility. And wouldn't it be fun if we could figure out a way to fund the horn on the backs of little maggots and trumpansy turds and whatnot? Wouldn't that be grand? Hey, thank you very kindly to our buddy VT Blom in the chat room. Thank you very much. We now have only $20 to go to finish off Shirley's challenge for the first day of the month. And how awesome that is. Thank you very, very much indeed. That is tremendous. Thank you. Thank you very much. So that gets us pretty much all the way up to the modern present for this Thorn in the Side Thursday. And we do have us some thorns. Take, for instance, no, really, take her. Somewhere. Far, far, far away. I'm talking, of course, about, and we've had an ongoing discussion about whether it's appropriate to use this term, and I haven't had any major pushback from any members of the Horn Family Community Congregation, so I will continue to use the term White Power Barbie. By the way, Jeff from Hellhole, Indiana, in regard to Chevy HHRs, says, Bob, a go-kart might be an upgrade. I'm still puttering around beautiful rural Hellhole, Indiana, in a 1993 Geo Tracker with 285,000 miles on it that I bought new 24 years ago. I think it used to be red, but it's now mostly rust brown, and it still runs, and it's paid for. You know, running and paid for is the big part. That's where you start winning. It's after it's paid for, and it keeps running, and you're not pouring money into it. That's the winning part of it all. And, you know, I think you just ran an advertisement for the Geo Tracker, Jeff. An American-made vehicle that'll get 285,000 miles and still going? That must have been one of those cars they built on a Tuesday or something. Or was the Geo Tracker, or was that a rebranded somebody? Oh, no, that was the rebranded Suzuki Samurai, wasn't it? Wasn't it? I think it was. But still, that's awesome. Congratulations. I've only got 150,000 on the vehicle here. I hope we make it to 285. But anyway, I haven't had a lot of pushback on the idea of White Power Barbie. Because when a person, without regard to gender, is as odious and obnoxious as Tommy Lauren is, remember, who's... whose granddaddy illegally entered the United States. Not saying, just saying. You kind of leave yourself. God, I mean, what do you reckon being 25 or so years old and working for Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, what do you reckon that pays? And what do you reckon you have to put up with? Because, of course, she's a girl Nazi du jour there at Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda. But they come and they go. For instance, I can remember several years ago, well, not several, the last couple of years before it all fell apart, when we used to have great fun when she would show up in clips with a Fox personality by the name of Andrea Tanteros. Well, I guess she's still a wingnut piece of crap, but she's become kind of a wingnut piece of crap that people have a little sympathy for because of the shabby way that she was treated by Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, you know, the favorite channel of the President of the United States, who is also a serial sexual abuser, sexual molester, sexual assaulter, sexual harasser. Because, among other things, Andrea Tarantula Tanteros recently pointed out that Roger Ailes, apparently, according to her, had surveillance equipment installed so that he could sit in his offices there at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda and watch the women who worked for him get undressed. I know. If I had a ew sound effect, I would use it. Mm-hmm. Then again, maybe we've got. Of course, he's gone on to his long home and his reward. Maybe this is a sound effect. Yes, here we have. Here we have audio of from the inside of Roger Ailes' office back before he started pining for the fjord.
Good. 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 You make me feel good. 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 Good.
Yeah, that's enough of that. That's disgusting. But then again, so was Roger Ailes. Interviewed by Axios, or reported by Axios, Andrea Tanteros, in a proposed amendment to her sexual harassment lawsuit against Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, wishes to allege language as follows. Ailes had a closed-circuit TV system that allowed him to see inside Fox News offices most Fox female talent disrobed daily. Now, she also went on to allege that Ailes had spyware installed on her mobile phone, quote, that enabled Fox to turn on the microphone and camera of the device at will without the knowledge of the employee. Fox News, of course, despite Ailes being all dead and everything, well, the money is still at hazard, so Fox News is denying the allegation. But then again, this is also the same, and I'll remind you, because by virtue of talking about Roger Ailes watching women undress and get dressed and everything, I've probably already ruined dinner for several dozen people across the country, or people contemplating dinner out on the West Coast. I will remind you that at a picnic or an outdoor party of some sort, Fox News had Roger Ailes was once to reported to have looked at a woman jumping on a trampoline and said, "I sure hope you're not wearing panties under there." Yeah, I know. So, you know, that's the culture that White Power Barbie was so eager to get into, and thus bringing us to one of our thorns in the side. It's not a long clip. It's not a big clip. Apparently, I don't know. Maybe she was drinking or tweaking or doing something that got her about half out of her mind. Then again, maybe she just watched the State of the Union, because this goes to Tuesday night, the night of the State of the Union. And White Power Barbie, Tommy Lauren, just couldn't resist opening her personal Instagram account, which of course is followed by skeevy old right-wing men all over the country, and delivering some remarks regarding the Democratic response as delivered by Representative Joseph P. Kennedy III. Mm-hmm. Yeah, stay classy, Barbie.
If you haven't yet had the displeasure of watching that little limp dick's response to President Trump's State of the Union, I suggest you take some Pepto-Bismol or some Midol or whatever you need to do to get through it, because it was pathetic and it was embarrassing. Oh, my God.
And she does the part where she puts her flat palm up close to her face as though she was going to cover her mouth. But unfortunately, she doesn't cover her mouth, and she just kind of pats at her. Oh, my God. You know, like, I don't know, like she's going to need the smelling salts and the fainting sofa or something. But there was one thing, and apparently folks didn't notice it, or it wasn't mentioned in the article that I saw. She has since gotten into some shit for saying such a miserable, shitty, sexist, abusive, you know, Joseph P. Kennedy III is now entitled to use the Me Too hashtag because she's made a disparaging genital remark. I mean, I presume he is. She objectified him. No, I'm not one of those men's rights assholes. I'm just pointing out that right-wing women can be every bit as hateful and nasty, and perhaps more hateful and more nasty than white-wing men. But here's the part that nobody remarked on. There's this gesture that people make now with the old okay symbol where you do it with the back of your hand, or not the back, but you know, the blade of your hand forward, and think about Eddie Murphy's hilarious take on buckwheat, where he'd say, "Oh, Tay." And so you see the O straight on. Well, because we live in a weird little world of right-wing trolls and Nazis and neo-Nazis and crypto-Nazis and proto-Nazis and wanna-Nazis and, well, Aryan Barbies, there's this thing now where if you show, instead of doing the O-tay buckwheat thing, if you show it the other way, with the palm of the hand forward or the back of the hand forward, guess what it means? White power. Because the three fingers form the W, and then the index finger closed with the thumb forms the P, white power. And lo and behold, here we are. I refer to her as White Power Barbie. And in that Instagram post, she gives the white power sign. Oh, don't start, Arthur. Don't start. Just Please, don't start. But there it is. If you watch her stupid Instagram video from this stupid young woman, you will see her give the white power, I don't know, what are we going to call it? The white power lodge sign? I mean, there's no sense in running the audio again, but I'm just looking at the video to make it. You know, so there's the hand wave, hand wave, hand wave, hand wave. And then she gives the white power salute. We've had other examples of it. And that's why I immediately went, wait, everybody's bitching about language. Everybody's complaining about her referring to Joseph P. Kennedy III as a non-erect penis. But nobody caught the fact that she gave the white power thing. I'm telling you, folks, we got to get better at this. Yeah, there it is. I mean, maybe I should, here, you know what? I should. Let me just do this real quick. Okay. I'll tweet that maybe during the break or whatever, put it up. I'll tweet it. And y'all can see what I mean. She has since apologized, y'all. Not for the white power part, but for the unengorged penis part. Mm-hmm. She took it down. She took this video down, presumably thinking that the internet forgets things. But then it really doesn't so much. But she took it down and then said, you know, my comments on my personal Instagram about Kennedy's response were inappropriate, and I take full responsibility for that. I got too upset. I sincerely apologize. Yeah, bullshit. I don't see any apology in there for the white power salute. Well, that's because she wouldn't apologize for something like that. No. Not at all. Meanwhile, Steve in New York said, subject line, Tommy Lauren, I kind of like Queen Anthrax II. I don't know, Princess Anthrax, because, well, you know, Anthrax Coulter is still, I presume, on her throne, and, you know, it, right. Steve wants to know, do you think she's smart enough to know it was a white power salute? Yes. No, it's not a matter of smart, it's a matter of being plugged into the movement, and she most assuredly is. She spends the entirety of her existence aligning with the white wing, the neo-Nazis, the Klansmen. She's their little darling. No way around it. Note coming in from Scott and Punky. Subject line: Metformin. The things you guys grab onto. I'm not sure what impact metformin had regarding gut problems, whether it caused some you didn't already have or aggravated issues you did have. I've been on it for some years now, 500 milligrams three times a day. Initially, there were issues with my GI tract, but I self-adjusted dosing to once, twice a day, and it didn't affect my numbers according to my several times yearly lab workups while maintaining adequate therapeutic impact. Yeah, well, I think it... I got off it after the last bout of don't eat anything for a month, Bob, And life has been considerably better, and my blood sugar has been in a happy place. In fact, my blood sugar is better looking at diet than it is with looking at, and I really didn't change diet much, except for the month when I didn't eat anything, all that yogurt. P.S. says Scott and Punky Crab, best damn crab cake I ever had was from a place called Bush's, a few miles from the Chesapeake Bay Bridge on the D.C. end. That was the late 1960s, so it may not exist anymore, but those crab cake sandwiches were good 2 inches thick, topped with homemade tartar sauce. I salivate even recalling it. And the best cream of crab I ever had was a little restaurant in Fenwick Island, Delaware. They also had amazing breakfast. Well, this was just a little cinder block shack. And I'm glad to, I'm glad Asa recalled the name of it, because like I said, if I ever get up to I-83 again, I'm going. Oh, it was good. And those crab cakes were huge. Best crab cakes in D.C. are to be had over at Eastern Market, by the way. I don't care what anybody says. There. Right there. Simple, easy, not fancy, just great crab. And when the soft shells come in, be still my heart. Meanwhile, Marty says, a geotracker? Harlan Ellison would be proud. Now give him some money. Not quite sure about what that exactly means. Michael in Madison with a note, subject line, Nutri-Jesus. I hear old Marion Robertson has an entire warehouse full of unsold Sea of Galilee mud masks that he's looking to unload for pennies on the dollar. We could just repackage those as a nutritional supplement and get this venture off the ground for real. That, by God, almost sounds like an entrepreneurial idea, Michael. It really, really, really does. So, you know, Tommy Lauren is a start. She's by no means the be-all and end-all, but for a thorn in the side Thursday, a start. Arnold and Cheryl pointing out, are we sure we want to give her that much intelligence or credit for it? I can't stand to watch her. She makes me vomit. But is she really smart enough to know the difference between WP and OK? It's a big deal, the WP salute. I mean, there are little itty-bitty Nazis in America who know that. So little itty-bitty Klan Kitties auxiliary members who know that. It's not really a matter of giving credit. I know she's plugged in based on her messaging and the things she says, and it's more of an it only stands to reason kind of thing. At least from where I stand. Yes, I know who Harlan Ellison is. I just missed the geo-tracker reference. That's all, Marty. Now we've gone into a discussion, the food porn portion of the program, a discussion of the best crab cakes in D.C. Stephen, New York, who lived in D.C. for 10 years, says, the Carlisle Grand Restaurant on Shirlington, just off 395 outside of D.C., best crab cakes I've ever had. Did you ever get up to Eastern Market? You know, no frills. It's just a little working folks, you know, burger and crab cake stand there. But I've never been to the Carlisle Grand Restaurant on Shirlington, just off 395. By God, but it's kind of hard to get bad crab cakes in D.C., pretty good oysters to be had, too. Now I'm hungry. Damn it. See what you guys do to me. But, you know, Thorn in the Side Thursday has many facets. Oh, yes. For instance, because, you know, we just got past Holocaust Remembrance Day, and I am decidedly not a Holocaust denier. I don't think anybody in their right mind is. But there is a diplomatic feud breaking out, or has broken out, of all people, between the Israelis and ostensibly the U.S., although, and Poland. Now, you know, Poland is in the grips of a right-wing movement. places like Poland and Hungary are rapidly sliding toward fascism. That's part of why Caratine Caligula went there. And the very carefully staged, managed crowds that were there to cheer him on some months back included people waving, that's right, the devil's diaper. Our buddy Bruce of Shirley's Challenge came up with that, and I thought it was a dandy. In other words, the Confederate battle flag. Because fascists in Poland know that even though they cannot wave the Hakenkreuz flag, they can, by God, wave the Confederate flag, and it means the same thing. So yeah, Poland is disturbing right now. And they have manifested it with their very own little old Holocaust denial bill. I guess they call it a bill. A proposed law, which is awaiting the signature of the Polish president, Andrzej Duda. Duda. Sorry, couldn't resist. And the Israeli government is, and look, you know, this is not the program to tune in to if you want cheerleading for the right-wing proto-fascist Israeli government of the psychopath Bibi Netanyahu. But I judge these things on a case-by-case, you know, an ad hoc basis. And in this particular instance, I think Israel has a little bit of a beef. Okay, a lot of a beef. And I take issue with anybody who tries to hide the horrors of the Holocaust. And Israel is pissed. Now, fortunately, Poland's too far away for them to send any jets up to put guided missiles into the cribs of any little Polish children like they do Palestinians. But on this issue, they're in the right, and presumably the United States is not particularly keen on this either. I guess we'll sort of, you know, gurgle and burble a little bit about not being happy with it, but frankly, our president's base is composed of fucking Nazis, so you got to take that into account too. But what's got all of this going is the fact that draft legislation, which is now sitting on President Andrzej Duda Day, which is sitting on his desk, and of course he's a fascist too. He's part of the law. What do they call it? The Law and Justice Party, which is spelled PIS in Polish, I guess. That's what the article says here. The PIS Party. He's got 21 days to sign this thing into law, and presumably he supports it because it's his party. Well, what this law does is it provides for fines, monetary fines, and prison sentences for anyone who attempts to or succeeds in, I guess, I mean, I don't know how you would attempt to. Speech is speech, after all. So it's sort of broad so that you could maybe go after your political enemies with this thing. But anybody in Poland, if this thing becomes law, anybody in Poland who suggests that, say, Auschwitz was a Polish death camp, you know, because Auschwitz is in Poland. Anybody who does that is liable to be thrown in prison and or fined. And these right-wing fascists are now declaring that the entirety of the Polish people were all victims of the Nazis. Now, this shouldn't be something difficult to deal with. And it's fundamentally dishonest on the part of the Poles to try to pretend that there weren't any Poles involved in the Nazi occupation of Poland. I mean, it's just history. I'm not selling history short, but it is. It's history. And this is a real thorn in the side, because it's a whitewash job. Of course Poles were involved in what the Nazis did in Germany. Now see, if I said that in Poland, and this law was in effect, I'd be off to prison. Because there's also that pesky free speech issue, which apparently the piss party there in Poland doesn't think much of. But of course there were collaborators. You can't occupy a country without having people in your country to collaborate with the occupiers, no matter who the occupier is. You know, we have Iraqi refugees in the United States now because they chose to collaborate with the United States in its occupation of Iraq. Regardless of what you think of the American occupation of Iraq, we did, and we needed translators, and we needed people to provide food and whatnot. So there were Iraqis who snuggled up close to the United States, and the ones that didn't get blown up for being collaborators with the occupiers, well, some of them are over here now. And I'm not criticizing them. I'm merely using that as an analogy to make it clear that occupations require local participation. So yes, Poles participated in the Nazi occupation of Germany, and by extension, Poles participated. Some Poles, you know, not all Poles, but some Poles participated in the Holocaust. The French. There were collaborators in France. There were Nazi sympathizers in Great Britain, descendants of whom are wearing the fucking crown. Or kinfolk of whom? There were Nazi sympathizers in the United States. I mean, you know, a little known man by the name of Prescott Bush comes to mind. Nazi collaborator, Brown Brothers Harriman, Tyson Krupp, Fritz Tyson. It was a reality. Henry Ford loved him some Nazis. And in the aftermath of the Holocaust and in the aftermath of the World War II, of the Second World War, yeah, people had to deal with it. As Arthur alludes, I guess the whole heritage not hate thing has caught on over there. Maybe they got that translated off of the Confederate flags that they were waving. Jesus. But it's true. Protests have erupted in Israel over this, because the Israelis see this as an attempt to cover up the fact that there were more than just Germans involved in the Holocaust. Israeli Foreign Ministry spokesman Emmanuel Nashon said, Israel views with utmost gravity any attempt to challenge historical truth. No law will change the facts, and Israel adamantly opposes the bill's approval. And it's not just Likudniks. There are people from the opposition. Itzik Shmuli, who's an opposition member of the Knesset, said the bill makes Poland, quote, the first nation to legislate Holocaust denial, and went on to note that Poland would be judged twice for its role in the Holocaust and its despicable attempt at denial. And meanwhile, Poland responded, we, the Poles, were victims as were the Jews. This is from Beta Sidlo, a senior figure in the PiS party. And by the way, the vote was 57 to 23. Two people abstained. Zydlo, a former prime minister, said, it is a duty of every Pole to defend the good name of Poland. Really, we're gonna go down that road, are we? And you know what? I hate to even admit this. Give it another 50 years, and no matter the best efforts, of people to keep the memory of that horror alive. Now, you know the old saying, a lie can get around the world before the truth can get its shoes on. And with things like Russian interference in social media, which is real, by the way, the little wing nuts had a hissy the other day, little white wingers, little stooges, because Facebook started telling them, oh, by the way, some of these accounts you've been following and reposting on, we found out they were Russian accounts. And little white wingers were, well, this is censorship. Ain't neither not no Ruskies. And, of course, the same thing was done on the left. But it saddens me. It does indeed, to think that we are moving, and I mean the data supports it. Globally, we are moving toward a resurgence of fascism. Take, for instance, that cranky old octogenarian in Arizona, Joe R. Piehole. Going to run for Jeff Flake's seat in the Senate. It was reported today that he gave five separate interviews to a web presence that is known for its virulent anti-Semitism. In a story that came out yesterday from the Arizona Republic, they reported that Joe R. Piehole has given five interviews to American Free Press since 2014. The most recent one having been 11 days ago. The American Free Press, AFP, curiously the same letters as Agence France-Presse. The AFP has run American Free Press article. They've run articles like "Jews Who Control Hollywood" by Mel Gibson. No, it wasn't by Mel Gibson. No, that's just what happens when you get pulled over drunk out of your mind on the 6 7/8 or the 4 9/16 or whatever, and the police officer says, "You've been drinking," and Mel says, "It's the Jews, I tell you, the Jews." Right, yep. They promote things like the role of the Rothschild in fomenting unrest in Europe before World War II. American Free Press is a big Holocaust denial site. And they were, of course, founded by a, who'd be surprised, neo-Nazi. And for all we know, a big fan of Tommy Lauren. Joe R. Piehole now says, "It was brought to my attention. I gave interview to publication that supports anti-Semitism. I was unaware, and I don't support that viewpoint. I just gave him 5 interviews, y'all, because I'm a friend of the First Amendment. That's what I am. Here, put these pink nylon panties on your head. I think the interview will go better if you do that." Yeah, I know. I understand, Ron. Ron and Raleigh's subject line, screw them. They may be right, but screw them anyway. Let them sort it out for themselves. They're not our friends. No, I don't think they are either. But I'm looking at this, Ron, in terms of the larger umbrella of we really shouldn't be tolerant of Holocaust denial, whether it's done on a country basis or on an individual basis, because that's how the next one happens. And I really do align with the whole idea of never again. Although it seems to keep happening again and again and again. Rwanda. South Sudan. And that's just a start. Yeah. But I get your point. Marty, meanwhile, says, and I don't know, maybe this could get me in trouble. "I don't think Poland's denying the Holocaust. They're merely denying responsibility for any role they might have had in it." Yeah, which is kind of 6 of 1 and half dozen of another, isn't it? Steve in New York, meanwhile, says, "No supporter of the Likudniks here. But yeah, I'm going to be with Israel on this one." And it's not even a matter of being with Israel. It's a matter of being with history. That's the thing. It's history. And anything that tries to dilute what the Holocaust was is an attempt to dilute the history of that horror. And meanwhile, Robert in Australia, subject line, "White Power Barbie. Why isn't White Power Barbie married and popping out a kid every 10 months? She should have about 5 by now. If she wants to save the white race, that's how to do it, right?" Yeah. P.S. Race is an illusion. Race is a fraud. But I get your point. Then again, she got run off from the Blaze forever. You know, that's that Beckerhead outfit. By saying that her conservatism did not extend to allowing men to determine what she did with the reproductive portion of her insides. And that's what got her booted out there, because I imagine they probably felt like she should have been on kid number two or number three by now. And, you know, so does most of White Wing America. But, again, they judge these things on an ad hoc basis. And, well, it's good for her career not to be all those filthy old men wanking madly away at her Instagram photos.
She's pretty. She's real pretty. Yeah. God bless America. I stand for the national anthem. Except when I'm playing with myself while I'm looking at a picture of Tommy Lauren. Yep. God bless President Trump. MAGA!
Yeah. Hey, we call this Thorn in the Side Thursday for a reason. Oh, speaking of popping out a kid every 10 months, we've also got this. In a lawsuit by the American Civil Liberties Union against the Trump administration, a little something has come out. And this will have to do while we're waiting for the second season of The Handmaid's Tale. You may recall a case of a young immigrant girl who was pregnant, who was in the custody of, she was in one of our concentration camps. She was in the hands of the Office of Refugee Resettlement. And about 11 months ago, she sought to use the, because she was at that point in her pregnancy, she wanted to use the, RU486? You know, the abortifacient pill. A woman takes one, and then 2 days later takes the second pill. It is safe, it is effective, and without a doubt far less invasive than other means of terminating a pregnancy. And she went to court, or the government went to court, to try to stop it through the Office of Refugee Resettlement. In particular, Scott Lloyd, who is the Trump administration choice to be director of the Office of Refugee Resettlement, last March wanted to explore the possibility of trying to reverse the abortion. You got that? Trying to reverse the abortion. Vice News has the whole story if you want to go and find it. But it all came out because the ACLU sued to try to make sure that the Trump regime doesn't interfere with access to abortions by female immigrants in the care, custody, and control of the Office of Refugee Resettlement. And what this guy wanted to do was keep the young woman from taking the second pill. And in fact, what he wanted to do was give her a great big, and I don't know if Agnes can hear me at the moment. No, I think she's doing something else, because this would make her hoot like a barn owl. They wanted to give her a loading dose of progesterone to stop the action of the first pill. In the transcript of his deposition by the ACLU, Scott Lloyd was directly asked if he had conversations about reversing the medication-based abortion.
I may have.
That was his answer under oath. The ACLU counsel then asked him The Office of Refugee Resettlement would try to reverse an abortion for an underage female who'd entered the U.S. on her own and who was in federal custody. To that, he answered, "I don't know. I mean, except to save the life of the baby," which is another way of saying yes. Well, in this particular case, the girl got to take pill number two. But the fact that the Office of Refugee Resettlement would even inquire as to trying to force her to undo an abortion in progress is terrifying. Bridget Amiri is lead counsel on the lawsuit, and she said, "The Trump administration's cruel and unconstitutional treatment of young immigrant women knows no bounds. The administration forced a minor to go to an emergency room for an ultrasound in the middle of a medication abortion and contemplated trying to reverse the abortion through an unproven method against the young woman's will." And on at least four separate occasions, with this Scott Lloyd character at the helm, the Office of Refugee Resettlement has tried to interfere in the medical choices of teenagers who really didn't want to be pregnant. The ACLU has intervened in each case. But now, with four cases to point to, the ACLU is trying to certify a class so they can just stop this vicious behavior once and for damned all. I mean, this is bizarre. See, this is what happens when you've got to keep so many disparate, hateful interest groups happy. On the one hand, you've got the anti-immigrant people who are pretty sure there's too many of those people on the planet already, while at the same time keeping the fetus fetishists in their happy place by trying to make sure that the little girl has a baby that Republicans hate from the moment it was conceived. It's enough to make a normal human being's head explode, but lucky for them, the maggots only have lizard brains, and consequently, something as annoying as a really crippling case of cognitive dissonance, it's not going to be that big a problem. Nah, of course not. They'll just make the baby get born, and then they'll send mama and baby back to whatever shithole they came from, and it's a win-win for everybody. See how it works? Beautiful, isn't it? Hi. It does. It gets. It'd drive me right around the bend but no, they can do it. Because the default position is just racism. And a homicidal disregard for the human worth of anybody who is who is so much as a shade lighter than a tub of Noxzema. You get the idea. Yeah, all these weird little white wing outfits have begun to get under the skin of Jeff from Hellhole, Indiana. Jeff says, "Freedom Caucus, American Free Press, Focus on the Family, Sound of Freedom, etc. You have to hand it to these bastards. They know how to brand their bullshit to the rubes. Oh, they do, they do. And hey, Silent R. Lamar, glad to know it. Got a note from Silent R. Lamar saying, still here, listening with my phone. Thanks, Silent R. Lamar. Thank you very much. So at 20 minutes past the hour, and with only 20 bucks remaining to finish out challenge this evening, Shirley's challenge, we'll go ahead and take a break. It being Tuesday, of course, the first day of February. What do you do with the R in February? Most people just say February. You ever try to... Ever Silent R. Lamar reminded me. There's two words that have a silent R in it, as far as I can tell. Silent R. Lamar and February. I mean, in French, it's like février, which just sounds terribly sexy. But in English, that R is a real pain in the ass. After a B and before a U. I try to pronounce it sometimes just for fun. February. February. I try it enough and I'll have a muscle spasm in my lips. February. But anyway, it being a Tuesday, the 1st of February. See, it being a Tuesday, the 1st of February, we've got the Green News Report coming up from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen, and I always enjoy that. If you want to get involved in what we call conversation radio, you're more than welcome to. Remember, we've got a brand new toll-free number you can use if you have to actually pay long-distance charges to call the program. Most folks don't. Most folks have anywhere long-distance calling on their cell plans or on their hardline phone plans. 304-574-8178 is, of course, the number. But if you don't and you want to reach the program, you can use, courtesy of Brother Deacon Asa, the brand spanking new shiny toll-free number. It rings into the same place as 304-574-8178. Don't be thinking we've got a second phone line or anything. We're nowhere near that wealthy. But 304-574-8178 if you want to just direct dial. Or if you need us to pay the freight, 844 the horn. 844 the horn. And 844 the horn is 844-843-4676. Dropping stuff here in the studio. So that'll get you in too. I did say it's a Tuesday. It's a Thursday. Still, that means we've got the Green News Report. Thank you, Steve, for catching that on my part. Oh, by the way, with regard to the reversing an abortion issue, Brother Deacon Asa just earned himself a cowbell. Incidentally, reverse abortion was how Marianne McLeod gave birth to Donald. Well played, sir. Well played indeed. Notes coming in. See, Elbert in Rhode Island is sorting this stuff out. Hey, Bob, if that baby was born, wouldn't it immediately become an American citizen? Yeah, because it'd be an anchor baby. And then there'd be all kinds of chain migration all over the place. Probably why we have to put chains on the anchor baby. Anchors got chains, don't they? Hmm? These are not the things that trouble the minds of maggots, trumpansees, and the like. Terry in Amherst, where they don't pronounce the H, with a note, Poland's losses in the war, a fifth of pre-war Poland's population were killed by the Nazis and Russians in the war. Jews were exterminated, and at least 5 million Poles were killed, and no one ever hears this, but President Duda doesn't deny that some corroborated. Some polls collaborated that, and that is, collaborated. Some polls were undeniably Nazis. Now, horrible losses were imposed all over Europe. A river of blood, a flood of blood covered Europe as a result of the madness of the bloodthirsty, homicidal madness of fascism. But it seems to me to try to hide from the roles that people played does history no service. God, Poland, you know, September 1st, 1939? It starts across the Polish border. And the Germans were relentless and ruthless. But there's always somebody that's willing to go along to get along. You know, that's why we've got that little slogan here regarding Trump. No collaboration. No collaboration. Clarence wants to know, hey, Bob, did Sheriff Joe R. Piehole mention that he has a Jew lawyer like Judge Moore? I don't know if he's gotten there yet, but maybe what's her name? Kayla. Maybe Kayla can give him a call. Maybe she can recommend him a good Jew lawyer. Well, we're not anti-Semitic. We got a Jew lawyer. Just look here. Jesus, those people. James with a note, subject line, our own humanity. We ourselves bear the responsibility if we sit by and watch it all happen, brainwashing notwithstanding. I don't want to see the good people of North Korea hurt because Donnie wants to get it on. Huh, not personally. With his shorpulence, Kim Jong-un. The good people don't simply exist on one side of any border. No, they don't. And it's always, it's generally always poor people who take the worst of it. That's where that old line comes from. Rich man's war and a poor man's fight. It's very real. Let's see, checking out, make sure I didn't miss anything. Oh, yeah. Yeah, going back to what I said about UPS, you know, sort of being okay with doing business with Nazis. Subject line from Steve on the Gulf Coast, a member of the fraternity of Steve. On the other hand, fuck FedEx. Since when did ignoring the ignorant make an entity like the USPS negligent in the performance of its mandate to provide impartial and professional postal services? You probably can guess I'm a great fan of such an organization, especially in light of a government that seems intent on doing away with the whole concept. It's the post office that refused, if I recall, to become something like an intelligence-gathering adjunct and proxy for all the official spy agencies a few years back. Evidently, they have more important things to do with a zillion pieces of mail instead. Agreed. And that's why, you know, this is that's a UPS store where our box is. And the UPS is the one that's A-OK with doing business with, you know, the Klan. That's where PMB318 is, in a UPS store. So, because that makes it easy for Boss Man Wayne. He just swings by, checks the mail, you know, puts back the spider-proof gloves, moves on. So I've managed to filibobster half the program away. Let's do take a little break and see what's on y'all's mind. If you're on hold, please stay there. We'll come back right after, right out of the break. This is listener-supported conversation radio. Hey, only $20 to go to finish the Shirley's challenge. That's huge. For the first day of the month. That's huge. So Hopefully that'll happen, say, between now and the end of the Green News Report. Maybe, possibly, who knows? Wouldn't that be cool? All right, later. I'll be back. I'm Bob.
One, two, three.
Nope, wrong one. This is the one I wanted.
Quit school when she was 17. Senator on TV calls her welfare queen. Used to be daddy's little girl. Now she needs help in this mean old world. Buys cassette tapes in the bargain bin. Loves Carlene Carter and Loretta Lynn. Tries to have fun on a Saturday night. Sunday morning don't shine too bright. It's welfare music. Watch the baby dance to the welfare music. Will she ever stand a chance? Make three, but one ain't here. Still chasing women and drinking beer. Says nobody understands how he feels, but that don't pay them monthly bills. Angry fat man on the radio wants to keep his taxes way down low. Says there ought to be a law. Angriest man you ever saw. Welfare music. Watch the baby dance to the welfare music. Will she ever stand a chance? Dance circles on the floor, round and round just like before. Baby fall down, baby get up. Baby needs a drink from a loving cup. It's welfare music. Watch the baby dance to the welfare music. Will she ever stand?
It's Thursday, February 1, 2018.
Tonight I'm calling on Congress to produce a bill that generates at least $1.5 trillion for the new infrastructure investment that our country so desperately needs.
In his first State of the Union, Trump proposes big infrastructure spending. But there's a catch.
FEMA says, oops.
FEMA is not ending emergency food and water distribution in Puerto Rico. Maine's governor bans all new wind energy projects. Plus,
there is tremendous urgency in our need to act.
New Jersey's new governor goes all in on offshore wind and cutting carbon emissions.
All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
To everyone still recovering in Texas, Florida, Louisiana, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands, we are with you, we love you, and we always will pull through together.
That is going to be a comforting message to the people of Puerto Rico once they have electricity to turn on their TVs.
This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, big news with Trump's first State of the Union address, but bigger news, I think, in Puerto Rico.
Yes, some very good news. Contrary to news reports, FEMA says it is not shutting off food and water aid to Puerto Rico. A FEMA spokesman said Wednesday that an official mistakenly said distribution of emergency food and water aid was going to conclude. That caused a huge uproar since, of course, nearly a million Puerto Ricans are still without electricity more than 4 months after Hurricane Maria hit.
It was not a mistake. They announced they were going to stop emergency food and water to Puerto Rico, but I'm glad they've backtracked. So,
indeed.
I'll shut up.
Meanwhile, President Trump said nothing about climate change or the environment in his first State of the Union address on Tuesday.
I'm shocked.
But he did praise himself and his administration for rolling back clean air and clean water regulations and undoing President Obama's climate and energy policies. And he also apparently doesn't include the booming U.S. clean energy industry in his definition of American energy.
We have ended the war on American energy, and we have ended the war on beautiful, clean coal.
Now, it's an inconvenient truth that the U.S. coal industry remains in terminal decline because of the U.S. natural gas industry and the rise of renewable energy. And the Obama administration is responsible for the tiny amount of clean coal technology that currently exists in the United States. Trump also floated an impressive-sounding $1.5 trillion plan to repair the nation's aging infrastructure. But there's a catch.
There's always a catch with this guy.
In past decades, the federal government would put up 80% of the cost of major infrastructure projects. But Trump's plan offers up only $200 billion in federal funding. That's less than 20% of the cost, stretched out over 10 years.
Every federal dollar should be leveraged by partnering with state and local governments and, where appropriate, tapping into private sector investment to permanently fix the infrastructure deficit.
So he's going to force state and local governments to pay for the bulk of this, along with private companies who will profit from this infrastructure, correct?
Exactly. That means that cash-strapped states and cities will have to either raise taxes, sell off public assets, or privatize those projects to raise the money. Now, that could be a hard sell, since Trump's $1.5 trillion infrastructure proposal could have been paid for by the $1.5 trillion tax cut that was passed by Republicans just last month.
Good point.
Meanwhile, in New Jersey, 6 years ago, former Republican Governor Chris Christie withdrew from a multi-state cap-and-trade compact called the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, or REGGI. On Monday, the state's new Democratic governor, Phil Murphy, began the process of re-entering REGGI. The cap-and-trade system raises revenue by incentivizing polluters to cut their carbon emissions. A recent study calculated that in the 6 years after leaving REGGI, New Jersey lost out on $250 million in revenue.
And as I broke in an exclusive at the time back in 2011 when I obtained secret audio tapes of Chris Christie addressing the Koch brothers, it was in fact after meeting with David Koch that Chris Christie decided to pull out of that regional greenhouse gas initiative.
Yep, and also, on Wednesday, Governor Murphy signed an executive order expanding and accelerating construction of wind energy projects off the Jersey Shore.
Clean energy and good jobs. This is how we make our economy stronger and fairer.
Murphy also said the ambitious target increases the likelihood that wind turbine manufacturers will choose to build factories in New Jersey to supply those projects. But finally, Maine's Republican Governor Paul LePage is going in the opposite direction. LePage, a longtime critic of wind energy, signed an executive order banning all new wind energy projects in Maine to, quote, protect its natural beauty, but he's totally okay with offshore drilling.
Congratulations once again to Paul LePage, the nation's dumbest governor. For much more on all of these stories, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Against the wind, I'm still running against the wind. I'm older now, but still running against the wind.
And it's about 20 and a half minutes before the hour on this Thorn in the Side Thursday. Look, do not go to the bank on anything I say that involves counting. or numbers, or it just don't. English major. For those of you new to the program, it's probably good to remind you that I satisfied way back when you could get away with this. I satisfied my math requirement for my college degree. You know, I'm not going to sit here and pull a Trump on you. Oh, I was summa cum magnet loudy. He's very loudy. Very, always the loudiest. No. I satisfied my math requirement for my college degree up at dear old Harvard on the Mon by taking the same class that all the basketball players and football players took. It was called Math 23, Introductory Concepts in Mathematics. We learned about how to count if we were Mayans. I was actually a tutor in that class. I met some really cool athletes. No, this is Blorb, and it's Blorb, Nix, Block, and just kidding. We would watch interesting films about mathematical concepts, such as, and I'm not kidding, Mickey and Donald go to Math Magic Land. That's they eliminated that class not long after, but not before I got out of there with that sheepskin. No, they didn't. So just no, it's not Tuesday, it's Thursday. It is the first day of February, and we're all square. And hey, even better, we have licked Shirley's challenge for the month of February. Thank you very kindly to Keith, and thank you very kindly indeed to, did I miss one? I know I did. Here, let me look. I'm obsessive about thanking everybody who keeps this program on the air. Yeah, Henry. Thank you, Henry. Thank you to Henry and Keith. We are done with fundraising. For tonight, hallelujah. Now, let's run over and check in with Todd down in, hell, it'll be spring in South Carolina soon, won't it, Todd?
E-A-G-L-E-S!
Oh, man, I feel so bad for you.
We'll see what happens.
Well, I mean, they're going to play the game. They're going to play the game. And look, let me be clear. I'll piss off the Patriots fans, but let me be clear. I'll be tickled pink if the Eagles can pull it off. I just wouldn't bet that way.
Well, I'm not much of a gambler, and I understand they're underdogs, hence the dog masks. But you know, this team is better than everybody thinks they are.
Oh no!
This is not going to blow out.
God Almighty! They had home field through the playoffs. I mean. Duh.
That says a lot.
Yeah, they're not to be just casually dismissed. And you know, the biggest question for me is whether the Eagles fans were allowed to bring their own batteries to Minnesota, or did they have to buy them in Minnesota once they got there?
Well, they use a workaround. They have to rent the batteries, right? They have to put a deposit in, rent the batteries at the stadium. And then return them, almost like you had to put a quarter in your shopping cart.
Oh, so, at Aldi, yeah, right, okay.
Yeah, so that was the workaround. And the workaround is really the main reason I called, but I want to get to some fun stuff first.
Okay.
But anyway, and I had to rethink my sequence here, because it was funny when you started talking about math. Man, when you're a verbal person, the math is not good.
I mean, I hope it's, I'd like to think that it's not just, you know, a law of nature or something, but damn. I mean, I managed to pass geometry and algebra 2 and all that stuff, and I was terrified of trig, but got a little trig along the way, pulled out a D, you know, yay me. But, you know, when and I was explaining this to one of my kids, when I took Algebra 2 in high school and failed it, because I did, that was the same. That was the same year that I discovered marijuana and what was going on out behind the concession stand during break. And Algebra 2 was right after Bob discovers marijuana. But when I took it in summer school, and it was all I had to worry about, and it was 4 intense hours a day for like 4 weeks, and we just blew through, and I got an A. And it wasn't because it was an earned A. I actually understood what was going on by the time we were done. Quadratic equation, hell, I could plot parabolas till hell wouldn't hold me. But
yeah, I get it.
Calculus? No.
It's dry. You know what? You know how it is when you go to college. You can work around again. You can get around it. I have to face up to it at some point.
Well, I mean, statistics. Statistics ran me out of my archaeology major. You know that and physical anthropology, but it, yeah.
Oh no, that's what got me in. See, in psychology, there's no way around the statistics, and once you get, you know, you may as well drop out of school if you can't do stats. I love, man, stat. Once it clicked, oh my God, I was making straight A's in stat, because it's like a puzzle. And then when you make the graphs, plus I was making
but you had to pass too much stuff to be able to take the statistics.
Yeah, well, I mean. I'm a verbal person too, and it's just dry as hell. But statistics was, you know, I started to look at it like a puzzle, and then when you look at it like you said, you have to jump through the hoops to get to that point. And it's a shame. It's a real. I think, you know what, I have a theory on that, on the math thing. I think they should start teaching higher math at a younger age, so it's not dropped on you like when you're doing other things. Because when you get to be a teenage boy, man, you look at it, well. You know, other people, I'm going to say girls, but everybody's not into that. So whatever, you're looking at other people. You know, you got all these distractions. And then if you start smoking weed, that meth and marijuana don't mix. No, I don't think so. But, you know, yeah, so that, look, it's like that. You know, we're not the only people. But God, man, statistics are fun. That's why I love talking about standard deviations and stuff like that.
Chi-squares and, right, yeah.
Yeah, and then and like cross tabs, it's like, well, let's see, if you select out all the other variables, this is what we're left with.
Yeah, I understand. Like, oh, I understand it conceptually. I just can't do it.
Well, and then, but yeah, you know what's still messed up? They make you learn it longhand first. And they're like, oh, we have a computer program that'll do it.
Well, see, that's what all my math genius buddies told me about calculus. They said it's like fraternity hazing. They said Calc 1 and Calc 2 are incredibly difficult, but if you get through it, then they go, hey, here's Calc 3. It's easy. And you go, shit, it is. And but he looked at me and said, but, you know, you're never going to get through Calc 1 and Calc 2.
Wow. That was a good analogy. It is like, hey, yep. It's like hating. And, oh, you caught me off guard with the that abortion story. What? I'm not going to curse yet. Oh, my God.
Keep your powder dry, Todd.
I'm keeping it, man. I got the keg. Telling you. But, yeah, that's disturbing. What is wrong with people? Wait, you know what it reminded me of? Do you remember that South Park episode? It might have been Cartman's mom. Somebody's mom went to a doctor. And she said, doctor, I need an abortion. How old is the fetus? 9 years old. You know, and, you know, reverse abortion. Remember that episode?
Yeah, you know, and of course, Trump's mama's name was Marianne McLeod. And if only Sean Connery had been there after her first baby to say, there can be only one.
We'd be free. Oh my God. So I'm really calling about an interesting conversation from last night. It kind of hurt me, man. It hurt my feelings.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Well, you know I'm a snowflake and everything, but...
Yeah, but unlike Ivanka, you're not a silicone snowflake, so you got that going for you.
Yeah, no, I'm svelte and I'm hung, and I'm not ashamed of my body, so I'm done about it. I don't need no injections nowhere. You know, I hate to bring names up, but otherwise it won't be pertinent. But I guess I started it when I said Scott, what the hell was he doing when everybody else in the free world saw the Big Lebowski. So I was just wondering where the hell he was. But, that's fine. There's movies I haven't seen. That's cool. But to tell me I don't know shit, how many credit hours do you have, Scott?
Wait! I don't think Scott said that.
No, he said it a few days ago. Oh yeah, he said I don't know shit.
No!
He absolutely did.
No, not to you.
This wasn't yesterday.
No, but I mean, I don't. Scott's a very genial soul. I don't recall him ever saying that to anybody, unless maybe it was me.
Okay.
What was the topic?
It was just in general. I think he was saying, I tend to speak on a varied amount, varied topics. And the paraphrase, it was like, if he knows all that, he must not know shit. Or maybe I was dreaming. Okay, let's just say I was dreaming.
Might have been.
That's fine. Yeah, might have been. But my feelings are still hurt with this electoral college business.
Okay. Let's get to that, because you did write in about that last night. I didn't get to the email, but you did write in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I got a name wrong. I think I said Tawny, but I was talking about Taney.
What, Justice Tawny?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's T-A-N-E-Y, but it's pronounced Tawny.
Well, that's why I spelled it like that. Okay, I spelled it phonetically. Okay. And we talked about this maybe a year ago, in terms of the compact, because I was like, it piqued my interest when I first heard about the NPVIC, the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact. And, it's got a long shot. I don't want to waste a whole lot of time unless I'm pressed to, but, the positive part of that is that at least we'll raise awareness. Because as you mentioned, our side is not even attempting to try to amend the Constitution, which is difficult. But if you don't start, you got to start somewhere. You got to at least propose it. But the compact will at least make the our lawmakers know that this is what we need, this is what we care about. So in the meantime, that's the workaround. Now, what I didn't like what Scott said about that last night was that, we just have to, use the process the way it is. I'm like, no, these people are playing smash mouth, all right? These people are playing hardball. They're pragmatic. They're playing for keeps. You understand? This is like
they're playing like the Patriots are going to play on Sunday.
Well, yeah, they're coming and they'll cheat. That's exactly how they're fucking playing. Right. All right, I'm cursing now, motherfuckers. Yeah. That's how we cannot come to this fight fucking all hit doing baldness for a month. We got to get buckle up, man. Be serious. This is serious shit.
And yeah, you got to haul your jock strap up around your shoulder blades.
Way up high. No nuts. No, this is serious business, man, because that's why these off year elections are so important, and I definitely agree with him in that point. We have to do work all the time, but we can't fall asleep on this, because if you look at the state, when you start getting all the state houses, they have around 38, something like that, somewhere in the 30s. They got over half of the state houses, the state legislatures. That's a lot of power. And that's how they've been able to salamander, gerrymander, and stuff. And I know both sides do it, but it's just gotten out of hand. And what I did not like was when you made the, and you were being very nice about it, because I totally disagree with Scott's logic, you know. Because using that logic, then we won't get anywhere. But that's what parliamentary procedure is for. That's why you got to hire people who know how to read these laws and know how to do the workaround. It's like reading a tax code. That's why you hire a good tax lawyer. You're not breaking the law, but look, this is the law the way it's written. So this is what I'm doing. You know, that's what they do. This is no time to be bullshitting around. Fuck that. Because they, right now, it's almost like they have a cartel where they own the distributor, they own the product, and they own the consumers. They own the whole game, almost the whole game right now. And on the heels of that, which is another subject, you know, they're trying to invoke Article 5 because Tom Coburn has a book out, you know, demolishing the D.C. monopoly.
Demolishing
like
the
that.
Constitution, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I have a bookmark, so I don't have to really speculate. But, yeah, Tom Coburn has a whole book. It's almost like a recipe manual. And, you know, we've been talking about this for a couple of years.
Well, what scares me is that...
Another tangent, but you see that...
What scares me is that statistical... There we are again. That statistical analysis that was done of open seats. And a whole bunch of them, because of gerrymandering, just plain mathematically are not reachable.
That's it. See, that's what I was saying. See, this is what I was very disappointed with Scott last night. Because
I presume Scott's listening, and if he wants to participate or rebut or whatever, that can happen. But so I just want to make sure that I'm sort of shepherding this along coherently. There's track one, the Electoral College, and there's track two. Gerrymandering. They're separate issues, and they've got separate import. So is that fair?
That's fair, but they all exist in the same Venn diagram, and they all
there's overlap in a Venn diagram universe of. How to keep Democrats out of a majority? There's a circle called Electoral College, and that applies to the presidency. And there's a circle called gerrymandering of districts. And there's some overlap. I mean, Electoral College is presidential politics. Gerrymandering is House of Representatives politics, and how you draw individual districts. For purposes of state legislatures.
Yes, but and the simple flat on paper Venn diagram does not illustrate how powerful the House
Right, right. Or maybe that Venn diagram universe would be an overall universe of how Republicans cheat.
Yeah, because we hadn't talked about the voter suppression because there's two things Scott did not mention, but I want to go back to what. Well, I don't know. It's all over the place now. But, yeah, you see, the voters, remember, when it was just not that long ago when the states that were in question of having a history of voter suppression were unleashed to do whatever they wanted, they didn't waste a second. And it's not just the South. Look at Wisconsin, other states. They didn't waste a minute. You understand? They didn't waste a minute. Look at Wisconsin. They started, in other words, okay, you need a photo ID. You know what? We're going to shut down places where you can get a photo ID. We're going to make it really hard for you to even get the damn photo ID. So this is a concerted effort. You know, they don't. Republicans don't want. Now it may be changing because I don't know. Maybe changing now. I don't think it's changing that much. But they don't. They've never wanted regular people to vote. Because remember, way back in the day, congressmen voted for us.
Well, no, way back in the day, you know, people got to vote for you know, House of Representatives, and they got to vote for, you know, whatever their state government was. But senators were selected. But moreover, there's the question of who got to vote at all. And originally in this country, white property owners voted.
Well, now you're cracking the nut.
I'm sorry, what?
Now you're cracking the nut. You see, this is what hurt my feelings, is that I did not once hear Scott mention why this whole system of the Electoral College. In other words, it's based on bullshit. It's based in slavery and repression.
Yes.
And somebody being three-fifths of a person.
I don't necessarily know that he needed to say that, because I think I had made that point really, really clear, hadn't I? I mean, every time I mention the Electoral College, I refer to it as that relic of our vile slavery past. I mean, because it is. The Electoral College is something that was put in there to placate the goddamn slavers in the South.
Right. But he seemed to think it was like a sneaky trick, to use the compact. And I say no. I said, look, that's the system. And I've done some research on this. Now, right now, we have 10 states plus D.C., and we have a guaranteed 165 electoral college votes as of last July. We need 105 more. Now, this data pertains to last July. At the end of the day, it's going to have to go to the Supreme Court if something really happens. Because once we reach 270, everything kicks in. You know, all bets are off. That's it. But in other words, what I'm trying to say is that this is a taint. This is we need to get rid of this shit. This is some more bullshit that we're still having to live through from the vestiges of slavery. And it still affects us. And there's no reason. And the other part of this, the other dimension, is that I cannot tell you countless people I speak with, educated people, who have just given up. They don't vote federally anymore. They don't care. So, my vote doesn't count. And when you made the point, this is what disappointed me. When you made the point last night, which is absolutely true, because look at Pennsylvania, where everybody can show up and vote, quote unquote, the right way, and it still won't matter. That's what, case closed. When you proffer that type of evidence,
I mean, that's my whole point. If it does not matter how many people show up, you still lose. You know, that's trying to shoot out the star on the target with the machine gun BB gun on the carnival midway with the bent barrel. Okay, there's not a dime's worth of difference between that and asking a person at a polling place to sign their name with a ballpoint pen on a piece of wax paper, or read you the first 100 words on a Chinese restaurant menu that's written, you know, in Mandarin. These are real things from America's vote suppressing Jim Crow past. And I think what's important here is that we understand that the gerrymandering is as Jim Crow. Look, they would have, during Jim Crow, they would have gerrymandered more vigorously if they thought they needed to. Instead, they just murdered people.
Mm-hmm.
This, right. The Republican gerrymandering is just soft Jim Crow.
I absolutely agree. And we cannot wait. The GOP is not going to do it. Why would they? It's not in their interest. It is not in their interest. They are not going to do it. You know, most suburbs are a certain way. Many of them, even around Atlanta, that's a little bit different. Atlanta's crazy, man. Atlanta suburbs, like Gwinnett County, you know, I have friends in Gwinnett County, and I'm like, God, everybody's represented. And all these people are affluent. You got Nigerians, Koreans. I mean, everybody. Everybody's wealthy, and, you know, whatever. But this thing about the rule against the cities, you know, this is not the way. The people who wrote our documents, the Constitution. They did not, I don't think they envisioned our lawmakers being this craven, you know, this despotic, this disgusting. Because look at what Mitch McConnell did with the judge. He had that judge on hold for a fucking year. A fucking year. Just because he could. And now look what we have. We have such a gory judge. I wouldn't trust that motherfucker with a goldfish.
No.
No. Shit. So this is serious business. You know, and to say, well, we just have to, you know, let the process work and people aren't showing up. Listen, I've lived in a lot of places, as has Scott. And I don't know what his credentials are. I don't know. But I know, as a professional person living in the city in a very diverse neighborhood, this is the only place I've ever lived where I could just walk, come in, vote, and walk out and not have to bring a book, not have to make sure they didn't have me water beforehand because I might have to go pee. I mean, literally, you had to wait hours to vote where I come from. But here, you're in and out because it's a Republican state.
It's
you're
a Republican. Well, I'll hold the phone for a minute, Todd. It's South Carolina,
sure.
Stan. It's a Republican state. They want to maximize voter turnout of the right people, and you just happen to be the wrong people showing up in the right precinct. So in and out, and you're done, and they're not worried about your vote because they got umpty gajillion pasty-faced, doughy white people going to drown your vote out. So naturally, you got all the infrastructure you need to vote on, and no, you don't have to stand in line. Right, exactly. I mean, you're experiencing, if I may dare say it, God, I hope I'm not white-splaining, you're experiencing white privilege.
The Dickens, you say?
I do say that. Because white folks got things to do. White folks go vote, and they leave, and they're done. And it's easy. I don't think I've ever...
Everybody's all happy?
Yeah.
I was shocked. I was like, damn. And, you know, the only time I missed a vote was here. And I got to mention this. People, before this midterm, you better make sure you have not been purged from the rolls. Because I was pissed, the only vote I ever missed since I was 18. Ever. And I was upset.
I mean, but there's all kinds of cheesy shit gets done. When he was, you know, when my kids registered to vote up at the high school, because, you know, we like for our students to be registered to vote, they were all registered independent. They weren't asked. They were just registered independent. Yeah.
How does that work?
Well, I just decided that, you know, it probably wouldn't look good if we registered all Republican, but, you know, we know they're not Democrats because, you know, they love Jesus and everything.
But wait a minute. Doesn't that require a signature? You have to sign off on that.
You sign it and then they fill out the rest and you're registered.
Wow. But, okay. That's disturbing. Wow, that would irritate me. I don't think I like that too much.
It is disturbing. Couldn't agree more.
Yeah. So, you know, like in my old neighborhood, and it's not like you can just walk in, this voter ID bullshit. Man, when I was in Philly, and I lived a bunch of places. I even lived in Kensington. I sent you that link. I don't know if you opened it up. I didn't have to vote. The voting wasn't around. I was only there for a year, and I got the hell up out of there. But that's where my girlfriend at the time wanted to live. Ugh. But, you know, you see these people, like they know who you are. People think cities are anonymous. It's not. People have routines. Everybody, you know, even if you live in a high rise, or you see people on the subway, the bus, whatever, the train. And cities are not as anonymous as country people might think they are. It's really not. But What if you're a single mom? You got a couple of kids in daycare. You know, you got to be at work at 8:30, be at your desk. So, you know, you're not going to be able to vote before work because the polls open at, you know, 6 or 7. Polls close at, you know, 8. You got to get the kids out of daycare because it's like $10 for every, what, 10 minutes or something you're late. You got to get the kids. And, you know, like, do I stand in line for this vote? That might not even count. Or do I just go home and make dinner for my kids and check their homework? You get what I'm saying?
I do. I mean, I remember, golly, eons ago now, I think it was the 2000 election. It was Gore and Bush. And I was still, we were still registered over in the other county where we'd moved from.
Mm-hmm.
And we had 4 kids, all under, mm-hmm. you know, all but one under the age of 10. Most of them, well, I guess, yeah, all but one under the age of, under the age of 6. And we had to jump in the minivan and schlep 90 miles over and 90 miles back to vote. And to go in and vote, you know, one sat in the car with the babies, and the other one went in and voted, and then I came back, and Agnes went in and voted. And it was complicated. And it's a hell of a lot more than that for people who have to, you know, miss work. And God forbid the boss knows, thinks he has an inkling of which way you're going to vote, and you're going to vote the wrong way. You're going to get some serious side eye. You know, I guess we got to let you go vote. You know, I reckon you don't care much about your job, want to go vote and all that shit. Some goddamn demoncrat. Yeah. You know.
That's a lot of work. Of course, I remember. Yeah. I've had to do that. You know, I mean, literally, yeah. I mean, normal people, I've had to leave work. Like, you know, I need to leave early today. I have to go vote. But I always had a job in college, you know. You know, you got to do what you have to do. But I mean, like I said,
talking to Michael last night, who wanted to know if I knew about the NPVIC. Yeah, I do. But if you're dealing with end runs on constitutional mechanisms, have a way of not working out very well. I mean, what if we had dealt, and that wouldn't have probably happened because I don't think these things were in vogue back then. But what if we had dealt with prohibition by having an interstate compact on booze sales? But prohibition was still on the books. You see what I'm saying? There's some shit you just want to get out. But I also understand the difficulty of it. There are old, nasty-ass things, for instance, on the books of states like South Carolina and Alabama and Mississippi. And I remember, I can't remember what the specifics were, but there was a case that came up a few years ago. Easy as could be. It was some filthy-ass racist thing that was still on the books in the state of Alabama, and somebody just brought up a bill that said whatever that code site was, be and is hereby repealed. And they couldn't do it. Oh, we don't need to do that. Everybody knows it's unconstitutional now, so we don't need to actually repeal it from our statutes or nothing. I mean, it's just part of history. Heritage, not hate.
Till they want to use it.
Bingo. Until you get,
like, well,
and that's what I worry about with the Interstate Compact, because everything comes down to it's going to wind up in Washington, D.C., in the Supreme Court, and I don't trust that bunch, those 9 people, I do not trust them with anything more complicated than I don't know, a paper airplane, and they could probably wreck things with one of those. And I don't mean, I'm talking about, you know, Roberts and Alito and Slappy Thomas and Ann's boy Neil and that Kennedy kid?
I firmly and absolutely agree with you, and that's another reason why I'm very nervous and concerned, because now, as you stated last night, and as people who are paying attention, once again, it's frightening. They're packing these courts with these reprobates and neophytes. Can you imagine having somebody?
Well, okay. Here's a federal court. Here's a very good case in point. I did a little further. I was so intrigued and, horrified by that case out of PA that we were talking about last night, that I did some digging around on it. And if I read it correctly, and I think I did, the Republicans are actually making the claim that their position should be upheld by the Supreme Court based on, wait for it, Bush v. Gore. Now we do remember, don't we, that we do remember that when Bush v. Gore was decided, the Supreme Court said, "Now we're fucking America, but we want to make it clear in this opinion that nobody should ever cite this opinion as precedent, because the only thing it's not precedent for anything. We're just disenfranchising the majority of Americans who voted for Al Gore so George W. Bush can be president. It's not precedent for anything." Guess what?
That's bullshit. And for them to say that, that was the worst. That is one of the worst things that's ever happened to this country, period. That's almost like, well, we need another Supreme Court to overrule this Supreme Court, because obviously they don't know what the fuck they're doing. How can you tell people to stop counting votes? The fuck is that?
Yeah, but the thing is, the argument is being made by the Republican President Pro Tem of the Pennsylvania Senate that he should not have to follow the order of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court because Bush v. Gore.
Right. And then this is not going to be precedent. Wait a minute. That's bullshit. It's the fucking Supreme Court. Anything they do is precedent. That is the precedent. They interpret and make law. When they interpret something, they're making law. When they interpret something, that's the fucking law. I mean, please correct me if I'm wrong.
No, you're right. But the thing is, I mean, what caught my hair on fire, Todd, is this idea that a Republican, a lawyer for a bunch of Republicans who want to defy a court order to turn over records that will show what a bunch of goddamn racists they are citing a case that the Supreme Court itself said, do not ever cite this case.
That's my point. But I don't understand that, because how can the Supreme Court, once they make a judgment, that is precedent? They don't care if they say it's not. We'll be dead, but that's on the books. Someone will do just what you said.
And they've done it.
I mean, I don't know. All right. So you're the lawyer.
I'm not a lawyer. No, I'm not. Okay, go ahead.
Well, My forte is psychology, and it definitely is not law. So, but I'm saying, I understand legally you can write an addendum that's supposed to be looked at. You can write an addendum to something that's like, okay, well, you know what I mean? Like you can write an addendum. That's supposed to explain how this decision should be interpreted. But that's well, you know what?
And that's the thing with Bush v. Gore. The thing with Bush v. Gore is they said, don't interpret this. Don't attempt to interpret this. Don't think that this is anything but this case, and we're going to carve it out, and it's going to sit off to its side, and cursed be that person who ever cites this as precedent. I mean, they said everything but that. And then you got these clowns.
I wish you hadn't brought this.
You got these clowns who are citing it. And they're saying that it should give them a right to tell the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania to go fuck itself. Because in Bush v. Gore,
like,
they told the Supreme Court of Florida to go fuck itself.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's what I was going to, just like when you said last night, you know, if one, all right, one legislature, one state judge says, you know what, fuck that, I'm not going to do it. What are you going to do? What are you going to do, send in the guard? I'm not going to do what you say. Then the next GOP run state says the same thing. So you know where that brings us, right?
Right.
Then we got a war going.
Well, eventually, what you've got is a breakdown of civil governance. But then again, you know what? Before the Supreme Court ever gets a chance to get its mitts on this thing, look, it's become a tick with me. Every time I hear some millionaire member of the four, every time I hear some millionaire member of the for-profit media say, "Well, you know, this might trigger a constitutional crisis," I don't think we're there yet because they're still making a damn fine martini down at O'Houlihan's on K Street. But you know, it could Trump could trigger a constitutional crisis, and at that point. My foot starts involuntarily tapping the floor, and you know, one eye closes a little bit, and I start stuttering and things. And Agnes says, "Bob, are you okay, Bob?"
And it should. And like, you should be a one-eyed peg-leg man.
And at that point, I'm practically, we're already in a constitutional crisis. What do they have to do? Come and march you out of your house for you to believe it? And it's just really
like
unhealthy
they say
in my
Philly,
blood pressure.
Every day. Now, every day. Probably every day. Now, right after Mika kicked Wolf off the set this morning.
Oh, that was a piece of work, wasn't it?
Man, I just happened to be in the kitchen and had that on because watching the journal was boring. I'm sick of hearing about immigration because that's a no-brainer. So I was like, okay, let me see what's going on. Because they do a cycle. So if you catch, like, I don't know, like 68 minutes of it, you got the whole program and they redo it. But, yeah, I was like, damn. What if she was that forceful with her hubby, man, he might, you know, but she just kisses his butt off.
Well, see, the part that got me was when she said, this is a very serious woman in a high position of power. How dare you say that she would fuck somebody? And I thought, oh, Mika, the things you miss because you go to bed so early, the things you miss because you only live in your little bubble echo chamber there at NBC. Oh, Mika, you don't know that she got punked by the morning zoo crew from Moscow in the morning, do you? You don't know that she admitted the existence of an imaginary island called Bonomo, do you, Mika? She's a very serious woman who believes in imaginary islands, yes. And I'm not trying to be mean to Mika. That's like kitten kicking.
Yeah.
And you know, she makes a good point once in a while. But if oxygen had a color, it would be very, very pale in that studio. I mean, if rich oxygen, like the color they use in hospitals, if rich oxygen was bright green, it would just be the faintest, tinge. Because I mean, they're up there. They breathe some seriously thin air. They're so high up there. We look like ants to them. You know, unless of course it's some unless, of course, it's some goddamn coal miner from West Virginia who's got a big bad case of economic anxiety. They can see them right up close.
I can't believe you'd say something like that about a professional woman who knows her value like Nikki Haley.
Oh, shut up.
You know,
And I say that with no reference to gender whatsoever. Okay? Shut up. Because nobody else did, but I did. I spent an entire program dissecting that recording of Nimrata Haley falling for being punked by, you know, Ivan and Vlad in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Is heavy traffic today on Red Mile by Red Square on Red Kremlin. Be careful out there. It's cold out there, comrades. Here is tape we played of making ass out of United States Ambassador to United Nations. She believed us when we said is fake island called Binomo. Woo!
Man. And I'll be honest, I don't think Joe appreciated that disruption. I could feel it. I don't think he liked that too much. I think he said something to her off camera about that. I think they had a little discussion at home after that. And it was funny, you know, because I went back to C-SPAN, after they do a little interlude. They interview other people. But a guy from Pennsylvania called in. You know, we're talking about Pennsylvania. And I'm not trying to really change the subject, because that was shocking this morning. But every day it's like they're pushing out. Like, what is it going to fucking take? And I don't know. You know, I think this thing, and I sent you an email about that a couple of days ago. How deep is this compromise? Think about it. Like, all right, fine. This picture's of me floating around. I don't really give a fuck. You know, I've done some things. I don't care. You know, I'm not ashamed of my body. But think about how easy it is with the Instagram and the Snapchat and this and that. How easy it is to compromise, especially with the between money and blackmail. There's not that many electoral votes. That's not that many people. They're doing this shit on the cheap. The Moldovians, they pay them pennies. They might be in prison. Who knows? They might be making those people, you know, anything. This shit is not costing a lot of money at all.
Oh, by the way, you're getting some you're getting some agreement from our buddy Steve from Georgistan, who just said Washington Journal's opening hour has been a snooze fest of late. They're avoiding hot button issues. They pick generic topics. Today was the economy. How about the lead story from yesterday that Nunez gave the White House a secretly altered memo? Steve says, I'm starting to doubt their credibility.
You know what, Steve? I agree with Steve, but you see, these geopolitics, I'm telling you, I've been hearing, because, you know, I have to listen. It's fun to listen to it live. You can listen to the podcast. But anyway, people have been complaining because they swear to God that these people are leaning left, because, you know, facts are leaning left. You know, if you learn some shit at the university, oh, you're leftist because you're dealing with facts. So when they start talking about facts, they're like, you're taking all those Democratic calls. Why do you let those Democrats go on and on? So I think they're leaning away, because you know how it is in the organization. You got your little powwow meeting every week or every, you know, whatever the supervisor wants to do. And they're like, you know, why don't we get away from Trump? You know, and this gets into the quote-unquote, why don't you let Trump be Trump? Why can't you say something positive about the president? What the fuck am I supposed to say? He's a goddamn rapist and a thief. Am I supposed to call him a choir boy? What the fuck? You know, but I mean, you can't dress up a pig. It's still a fucking pig. Let's make some bacon. You know, get out the acorn. Shit. Yeah, I agree with Steve. Yeah, Steve, I totally agree with you. Yeah, that's I was like, you know, damn, okay, come on, man. They've been talking about, you know, like, mealy mouth bullshit lately. Because a lot of times it's exciting. So yeah, you got to tune in later if you can. And then, so the guy from Pennsylvania, a citizen, from Pennsylvania, my old home state. And see, Pennsylvania, and he knew, this guy knew what he was talking about. He had his stats out. And it's, the statistic is amazing. It's because it is, like, per capita, it's overwhelmingly Democratic, the state. You know, take the whole state. But because of Pennsylvania and the gerrymandering, they have an overwhelmingly represented by Republicans, even though it's mostly a Democratic state.
There's a bunch of states like that.
And that's what I'm saying. That we're going back to where I started with Scott. This shit, this is no fucking play toy, man. If we can, this is, it's almost too late. It's almost fucking too late. Article 5, these people are pushing for Article 5. They already wrote, Coburn wrote the goddamn manual. He wrote the manual for these people. And I'm telling C-SPAN, you know, if I was still in the classroom teaching, man, I would, C-SPAN has a wealth of information. I mean, it's amazing what they have on there. I mean, Civil War and world history, American history, it's really something. It's a lot. There's a lot. You know, but finally, you know, people have been paying all these exorbitant, well, not weird, because I cut my cable off. Man, I didn't pay no cable bill since the 90s. Fuck that. But, yeah, you know, people have to wait. I don't know, man. We got to get on board. This is no playtime. Fuck Jill Stein. Yeah, you know, this is existential. This is not esoteric.
All statements of fuck Jill Stein are always accompanied by a cowbell. Just, you know.
Thanks, man. But it gets me hyped up, man.
And on the other end of the voting spectrum, there's some interesting news out there this evening. And again, this will, for all we know, this is going to wind up in the Supreme Court. But the Miami Herald has reported that U.S. District Judge Mark Walker heard a case brought by the Fair Elections Legal Network, who alleged that the Florida system of lifetime banning felons from ever being able to vote is unconstitutional. Guess what?
Mm-hmm.
That federal judge has ruled that a lifetime ban on felons being able to get the right to vote is unconstitutional. Now this is gonna get some white wingers up in some serious dudgeon, Todd.
You know where that's gonna end up, right?
Well, it'll end up with Neil Gorsuch telling them that all those felons need to freeze to death in a truck somewhere in Minnesota in the winter.
It's going to be such a gory decision.
Yep.
That's what I'm saying. We got to get this shit done now, because look at these people that the court is getting packed with weirdo right-wing people, bloggers, right-wing bloggers. I mean, nothing wrong with blogging. It's great. That's what we have to do now. I mean, they got the newspapers behind paywalls, and they want to slow down the internet. I mean, we're already there. We are a third world country as we speak. As we motherfucking speak. Did I tell you about the fucking hospital here the other
day? So the Florida case? No, the white wingers will go absolutely hopping up and down, playing with themselves, flinging poo crazy, because Judge Walker he's an Obama appointee who's trying to get let our criminals vote and overwhelm our good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christian white rights in Florida. And you know what? When you hear Alex Jones or Hannity or Flimball or one of these freaks allude to it, or some local creep if you're down there in Florida, when you hear him say something like that, just do me a favor. Just send me a note and say, "Damn, Bob, That tattered purple robe's got some serious power to it.
Say it again, man. Blow your horn. Seriously. You know, like Scott said last night, and it's true, you provide a wonderful platform, and it's a wonderful program and a wonderful service is not the right word. But
forum. How about forum? That's kind of
forum.
Classical, yeah. And Latin and Roman and stuff. It can be a forum. Yeah.
See, that's why you're a word man. It is a forum. It is. And you know, oh my God, it is, because occasionally you will get a guest and you will have an interview with a guest for the whole program, like someone really is that's what they do. And you'll get the long form interview with them, you know, to flesh out all the nuances of whatever topic has it, you know, at hand. So we can't. This is when we need to get into the next gear up, not gear down. Because obviously, we have to vote twice almost. Because these people are serious about locking their shit up, and it's obvious as hell that Trump has obstructed justice. I don't even know how that's a fucking. I'm not near a lawyer, but I've been, and that's crazy. How is that not obstructing justice? The man said, oh, yeah, I had to get rid of Comey because of that Russia thing. On national television. That's one count right there. Then we got this fucking unconvicted perjurer who is the head of our whole legal system with the fucking Dumbo ears. Fuck him. Saltine breath motherfucker. He's illegitimate. He's as illegitimate as a goddamn mulatto kid on a fucking plantation. Fuck him.
Jesus. Don't hold back, Todd. Don't hold back.
I mean, seriously, where does he get off telling people how to rule the law? And he's lying on his goddamn job interview. Fuck him.
Well, he's gonna go to work hard on trying to save our faltering private prison industrial complex. Going to be a lot more folks headed that way in fairly short order, unfortunately, because all of that Kenyan Muslim not wanting to send people to prison stuff. That's where your marijuana injectors belong, because they're killing America.
Well, you know, that might be the tip. It might sound a little fruity or whatever, but you know, this so many people, there's people on every side of this issue, but or that cannabis issue, but you know, people take that shit seriously because you know, as you said and I've said, everybody who has partaken or been in this in a certain type of subculture. We all know people who had been on hard drugs, and that has been the cure for them. We all know somebody like that. Beyond the obvious medical benefits, like for your stomach or for a headache or, you know, for different ailments.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Whereas prison is not.
No, we know what that's about. Yeah. And that's some bullshit anyway. The state is responsible for giving you a sentence, and the state needs to be in charge of your well-being. While you can't, like this prison we have here, they guarantee these little towns, okay, we'll keep this full, which means what? Over-policing in certain communities. That's what that means. But see, these white folks don't care, because they think they're not getting locked up, but they're getting locked up too, and this forfeit assets are forfeit. I'm getting too upset. You know, that's what I'm saying. This is the time is now. The time is now, because I'm not convinced. I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm definitely not convinced now that Congress is going to do anything. And like, you know, as we all know, the impeachment.
Congress is going to do plenty of things, just that none of them are going to be good. I mean, Jesus, this Nunez memo business. You know, I really haven't talked a bunch about it because, again, it's one of those cases where I figure the smartest man in progressive radio and other people have probably talked it half to death. But that's not for want of following it.
I mean, wait, who is that?
I'm not.
I thought that was you.
No.
Well, who's the smartest man in progressive radio?
I'm not going to say that. But
give me some initials.
No, quit it.
First initial.
No.
Does he have a wife?
Sorry, no, not playing.
Man, okay.
Yeah, you know, just ask him; he'll tell you. But anyway, it's not for want of following it, and the idea, and this is astonishing. The idea that you could take a 100-page FISA warrant and distill it to 4 pages and think that you've got anything resembling an accurate representation of what's in the FISA warrant is lunacy. And this Republican argument, well, you know, there might be some corruption in the FISA process because, you know, they relied on the Steele dossier, and of course, goddamn Hillary paid for that. They've got this mental block that keeps them from, their brains will not process the word Washington and Examiner together because the dossier was started by a right-wing Republican operation doing oppo research on Trump. Okay? But they've forgotten that, and they've also forgotten that, well, golly gee, I mean, looks like that Steele dossier with all the allegations about all the pee-pee in it. That corrupt FBI agent got the FISA warrant based on that, and therefore the FBI is corrupt. Now, this is not the program to come to for a full-throated defense of the FBI, okay? I know their history.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, the fact of the matter is, the whole ball got rolling because dude got drunk and could not go glass for glass in a wine bar in London with an Australian ambassador. Do not try to drink the Aussies under the table. You will lose. Okay? And I mean that as a compliment.
Wow.
Don't do it. I mean, it's like walking into a bar in Scotland and saying, y'all got any whiskey? Don't do it. And so, you know, loose lips sink ships and all of that shit. And it was that kind of, oh, no, yeah, we're working with the Russians. We're gonna crush that goddamn Hillary. You can bet your ass. You got any shrimp? And the Australian ambassador goes, blimey. And calls the FBI and says, I think you've got a problem there, mate. And that's how the thing happens. But Devin Nunes, all that shit doesn't exist. And then there's the little turd who helped craft the memo.
Mm-hmm.
Little turd's name is Kash Patel. Okay?
Hmm.
Now, Kash Patel, before he was a senior Nunes staffer and senior counsel for the House Intel Committee, that's some nice. That's some nice money. Well, he used to have a different lawyering job. Well, in 2016, U.S. District Judge Lynn Hughes, who was handling a case of the prosecution of a guy named Omar Faraj Saeed al-Hardan, who was accused of trying to support ISIS. Well, Kash Patel was such a hopeless fuck-up as a lawyer working for the Justice Department. I mean, when a federal district judge writes something like this about you, you probably need to find a better line of work. If the pretentious lawyers from Maine Justice knew what they were doing, or had the humility to ask for help from the United States Attorney for the Southern District of Texas, wrote Judge Hughes, it would not have taken 3 days, 7 telephone calls, 3 voicemail messages, and 1 snippy electronic message for them to indirectly ask the court for assistance in ordering a transcript.
Damn, Bob. Yo, judges do not write like that.
That is known in legal circles as being bench slapped.
That's not common.
The ABA Journal, the Journal of the American Bar Association, asked Judge Hughes about it, and Judge Hughes responded, "If the order is not self-explanatory, I failed."
Damn! Oh, he's late. He's slapping with the front and the back. Whackity whack.
And so then when this little turd showed up, this noble pleader, when he showed up in court, Judge Hughes said, "You're not a member of the trial team. It's been going on for a month or so, and you haven't been here, have you?" And then the judge continued and said, "And where's your tie? Where's your suit?
Oh.
Is that a
he
pledge
told the
pin?"
To go home.
No, he didn't say the pledge pin part, but and then the judge said, "I want to see your passport to show me that you really did just get back from an overseas trip."
Oh, shit. He wants to see his visa stamps. Damn!
And then he says, "Why are you even in this case if there were other prosecutors in the U.S. Attorney's Office right here who could have done it just as well?" Then this quote, "What is the utility to me and to the people of America to have you fly down here at their expense, eat at their expense, and stay at their expense when there are plenty of capable people over there in this room plus over there? You're just one more non-essential employee from Washington. You don't add a bit of value, do you?"
Whew.
And other lawyers sitting in the room were going, "Shit." Now, this is the piece of shit who helped draft the Nunez memo based on stuff Nunez has never seen.
Man, I had not. That is insane. Judges do not write like that.
No, because when a judge gets up in that territory, they're getting pretty close to being so fucking mad that they're creating their own error. And they're making grounds for appeal. But this judge was so pissed off at this asshole that he just went ahead and opened the can of whoop-ass and said, "Devil take the hindmost."
So, wait a minute. So now we got the scumbag Nunez who refuses to accept that he's goddamn Hispanic. He wants to be Anglo so bad. Remember his name? Remember he didn't want to take
his
name?
Yeah, he took He took the tilde out from over his N.
You can't trust a motherfucker like that.
I dropped my tilde and it can't get up.
Cowbell!
May not even be a tilde. I don't know.
We know what you meant. Oh, my God. No, I was done with him then. I was like, who you think you're fooling, man? Look at your hair. Look at your name. Look at you. You're fucking Hispanic. You know, you could want to be Anglo all you want. I mean, that's a personal issue. You don't even talk about this shit in public. That's personal shit. You're fucked up in the head. And he doesn't look right. He got them shifty eyes. I hate to break it down like phrenology, because he doesn't have bumps on his head. I don't know. By the way,
going back to "Don't Try to Outdrink the Aussies," Robert in Australia notes, "Australia, we invented refrigeration so we could drink cold beer." And I have permission to do my Australian accent from Robert, so that's cool.
No, but that's
old,
true.
That's old,
I mean,
by the
on.
Way, that's old Crocodile Kincaid, in case anybody was wondering.
Crocodile Kincaid?
Yeah.
Yeah, that, you know, they drink Foster's like water, man. Come on.
Did you just say, wait, whoa. Did you just let a little Philly sneak in? Did you just say Wooter?
I might have come out.
Okay. Happens, dude. Happens.
It happens. Oh, man. That Patel thing is unsettling.
Actually, I'm not. It's not Crocodile Kincaid. It's old Fennelweb Spider Kincaid. That's what it is. Crocodile's been taken.
Boy. Oh, that was it. You nailed it. You nailed it. Oh, my God. You got the hat on and everything. You got the big knife?
That's not a knife. That's a knife. Right. Got the boots to go with it. Right. Yep.
You're on fire, Bob. Oh, my God. You're on fire.
I need a keeper, Todd. I need a keeper.
You got that, man. That was like, oh, my God, a flashback to the 80s. He always had the good-looking woman with him. Ooh. Oh, boy. But seriously, this is like an every day. What is it going to take? I mean, these people have turned inside is out, outside is in. But I don't know if you caught this. I want to go back to Joe for a minute. Did you hear last week? Obviously he's a congressman and he's a lawyer, not practicing. But I know he's from Florida, Pensacola. But there's a lot of Jews in Florida, but maybe not. I don't know about Pensacola. That's different. You know, that's not Miami. But how did he not know how to pronounce chutzpah? I mean, there's not many words that have a C-H and a Z in it. I mean,
dude, there are people who say Chinooka every December.
Maybe I'm being too hard on, but okay. I'm grew up in the Northeast, man. That's just like second nature. I'm like, oh, chutzpah. You know, how do you miss that?
Chutzpah. Like, yeah. Oh, but you'll get a kick out of this since we're almost out of time. Did you catch the story where Junior went after the Washington Post and fucked up their motto?
Oh, what you spoke on last night.
No, this is different. He was trying to troll the Washington Post, and he mocked, you know, their motto is democracy dies in darkness. And in his tweet, he referred to it as their byline. Okay, well, I'll tell you what, that highfalutin education didn't get shit, did it? Their motto, not their byline, but their motto, democracy dies in darkness. And Junior turned it into, and you might want to get the hockey puck and other people who have from time to time partaken in the marijuanas. Because he's an idiot who apparently has little tiny thumbs just like his pappy, turned it into democracy dies in dankness.
What?
Democracy dies in dankness.
Oh.
Yeah, you can almost you almost see Junior sitting there with a big old cone, you know. Yeah, some dank shit, right?
Oh, man. He's lost.
No, that was Junior. That was the smart one. I got to pass out a cowbell real quick to Les with regard to the judge taking down Cash Patel. Damn, judge kept his pimp hand strong on that fool. Yeah, that was cowbell worthy. Absolutely.
Well, this is the beginning of the month, everybody. I went to the website. And I don't know what's going on. I tried twice, but I have to go back after the show. I got kicked out twice. Maybe people were trying to participate.
Well, no, I mean they're both working. Glory hallelujah! Finally got the domain name thing sorted out. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com works. HeadOn.live works. It all works, man. It all works. Woo!
Yeah. Maybe it's my fat fingers. Yeah, it kicked me back twice, but I'll see what happens after the show. Because it's the beginning of the month, everybody, and it's a new month. And, you know, this is a wonderful forum. We don't have to wear togas or anything, but it is a forum.
Yeah, you don't even have to dress up like when you're going to Walmart.
Well, anyway, I didn't mean to eat up this much time, but, you know, there's so much going on.
Todd, you were it's what conversation radio is about. I had a nice long conversation with Scott last night, nice long conversation with you this evening. It's about the interchange of ideas. You know, because the motivating idea behind conversation radio is that people are experts even if they don't know it. And so, you know, yeah, every now and then we'll have an expert guest on for this or that. But people are experts in their own lives. And this program tries to respect that fact and highlight it. So, you know, that's what that's about. So don't apologize.
Okay. Hey, Scott, if you're listening, we all love your storytelling and everything else. And best wishes to you and Punky. And, you know, keep up the good work.
You
and Bob, you're doing a great job.
And you know what? You need to send me, and then I'll send it to Scott. Send a copy of maybe a Sunday copy of The State. Isn't that the paper down there? And we'll see if
Correct.
We'll see if Punky will shit on that.
Oh, well, that's easy shit in there.
Because he won't have anything to do with the San Diego Union. So.
I wonder if he reads his old paper. I'm gonna tell you that. The St. Louis Post-Dispatch is a very good, it's a classic paper, I think, but there's all kinds of shit going on in Missouri.
I sure as shit wish somebody, McClatchy or hell, the New York Times would step up and outbid these right-wing asshats from Wheeling for the Gazette. I know people think, well, Bob, it's just a little newspaper. Well, that little newspaper won a Pulitzer last year, and that little newspaper has been the go-to for issues relating to coal mining, environmental issues, fracking, the opioid crisis. And it's been a great paper. It's been a great paper for a very long time. And for all these other consortiums just to say, oh, ho-hum, let it die. Let it be turned into a right-wing fish gut rap. It's wrong. I mean, I wish I had that kind of stroke. I wish I could reach out to Tom Steyer, who's pouring all that money into his quixotic campaign for impeachment that ain't going to happen with this Congress, and say, Bub, you can have this newspaper for a fucking song, and you'll have a newspaper, dude. It's not some bullshit petition. You're going to have a newspaper.
Bob, you know what?
At this point in time, I'd be happy if goddamn Gannett bought the Gazette. What does that say? I mean, these right-wing jackasses up in Wheeling are terrible.
They're important. You know, USA Today, that was beginning and end. I mean, it's nice and off here in the hotel, you know, but still, we need small, like a Philly man. I lived in Germantown. I was born and raised in Germantown. I ended up moving back there as an adult. And there used to be the Germantown Courier. And I used to love, everybody loved this paper. And they were the only paper that ran this story. When people, gunshot victims on the brink of death would come into this hospital, Women's Medical, and if nobody came to see that person, they were experimenting on them with fake blood, like artificial blood. And that story ran one time. And I mean, it shocked me. I could not believe it. Nobody else covered that story. And the Philadelphia Weekly, they're the ones who covered, they're the ones who coined that frame Santorum, the frothy mix, the bro mix.
No, that was Dan, yeah. That was Dan Savage.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, all right. His column was in the Philadelphia, yeah, because he's syndicated. Okay, so it was in the week. You know, everybody has one. The weekly day. All right, I stand corrected. But yeah, these small papers. I mean, it's a lifeblood of the community.
But that's the thing. The Gazette is not a small paper. I mean, it is the primary paper of record for an entire state, even if it's only West Virginia.
Oh, I didn't know. Okay. I'm sorry. I assumed something. Okay.
I mean, there's shitty little there's shitty little rags in Bluefield and shitty little rag in Beckley and crummy little rag in Parkersburg and a crummy little rag in Clarksburg and a really shitty little rag in Wheeling and Morgantown and hell, over in Martinsburg, they don't even know we the rest of us exist. But, you know, we're just out here
but
eating
Bob,
coal
you
dust.
You see where this shit is going, right? You see where this shit is going. They're pinching us on the internet. Then it's like, okay, we independent reporting. So what are you going to – it's going to be like, well, you know, well, somebody covered that story. Well, where did they come from? Well, some little podunk little paper, blah, 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 so they have no clout. But it's a real story, but if it's not – I mean, what else? You know, we're moving fast in the fashion.
At a rapid pace.
I didn't speak over you, but it's scary.
It is scary. But we got to get out of here, Todd. I'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Okay.
And by the way, I never did get that picture of you and your buddy, the architect. I never got that. Never came
through. You know, and it wouldn't get smaller. I got to keep trying to Google once you're. I just don't. It's crazy. I got to try. Yeah. Because Phil Freeland went and I stopped in Durham. In his office. Oh my God. Yeah. It's like, and I want you to share that with Ron from Raleigh because you might know him.
Oh, he does. All right, man. I'll talk to you
later. Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Take care.
Later. And so we find ourselves at the end of the first broadcast of the month of February 2018. Thanks to everybody for jumping in and meeting Shirley's challenge. That makes a big, big difference. And thanks to all of you who keep the program going. Thanks to everybody who shares some portion of their precious, finite time on this little planet with me and with us all, engaging in whatever way you choose. Thank you. That is of tremendous, tremendous value, and it is a huge, huge, it's a huge manifestation of friendship and trust and camaraderie. Thank you. Thanks to our all volunteer staff. Thank you very kindly to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you very kindly to our news ninjas. Thank you. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, for headon.live. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.